This message comes from NPR sponsor Hulu. Don't miss the new docuseries, Black Twitter, A People's History. From memes to movements, see how this powerful online community shapes culture and society. Black Twitter, A People's History is now streaming on Hulu.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. Sam Richardson is an actor. His breakthrough role was on Veep, the HBO show starring Julia Louis-Dreyfus, in which everyone is terrible and mean and incompetent and they all hate each other, except for Sam's character, Richard Splett, cheerful and incorruptible.
Is there a way to change Doyle's music without screwing up the lights?
Oh, absolutely.
Great.
Well, I'm not sure, but positivity is the first step.
Love it.
Change to what?
Doesn't matter.
I honestly have no idea. Just, what do you have on your phone?
Well, it's mostly self-help audiobooks and relaxation tapes. I'm quite an anxious man.
Sam is also a writer. He, along with Tim Robinson, co-created and starred in Detroiters, one of the most charming and hilarious television comedies of all time, about two buddies working for an advertising firm in Detroit. Richardson has also appeared in I Think You Should Leave, which is his buddy Tim Robinson's iconic sketch comedy show. He currently stars alongside Zoe Chow and Tiffany Haddish in The After Party. And I guess you could say that Sam Richardson has a brand. He plays cheerful, friendly characters who are so nice that they end up getting in their own way. That's probably in part because in real life, Sam Richardson is extremely cheerful and friendly. When I talked with Sam back in 2021, he'd just starred in Werewolves Within, a horror comedy. It's set in a small New England town. Everyone is trapped in a snowstorm, and enough scary stuff has happened that people are starting to wonder if maybe, just maybe, a werewolf is out there. Or maybe not. Hard to say. My guest Sam Richardson plays Finn Wheeler in the film. Finn is a park ranger. He's new at the national park nearby. And as the bodies begin to pile up, residents of the town start to turn on each other. After all, if there's a werewolf around, it could be literally anyone. In this clip, Finn makes a last-ditch attempt to keep everyone together with, well, a classic inspiring speech.
I know it's easy to point the finger and fear each other. At its heart, this is a community, you know? One that agrees about more than it doesn't. You know, hard work. Be a good neighbor.
Warm place to meet. Have a sandwich.
Love. All I'm asking is that we remember our common humanity. And we just hold off on being enemies till we've all had a little sleep.
That noise. I saw what happened to Pete, and I saw what happened to Dave, and I'm not going to stick around and let that happen to me and Marcus. Let's go, Marcus.
Hell yeah.
Sam Richardson, welcome to Bullseye. I'm happy to have you back on the show.
Oh, thank you so much for having me back.
How do you feel about werewolves in general?
A healthy fear.
Just like standard.
Just like standard, like what the typical amount of fear should be.
Uh-huh.
But not more than I think is normal. Like. There's no phobia, you know, of werewolves, just respect and appreciation for them.
How do you feel about scary things in general?
Scary things in general, you know, I'm not typically just like a scary person, you know, like or as in like a person who is scared.
Certainly, you're known for being fearsome.
That's my main thing, yeah, in real
terrifying.
Life.
Terrifying.
I'm just like
a real tiny Lister type.
Exactly. It's the one I kind of looks on to who knows where. I'll just come right out there. I have like a true arachnophobia, though. So like a true like irrational fear of spiders. So that's the one thing. Everything else, I'm like, yeah, sure.
Does it interfere with your life?
Well, I'll never go to Australia.
Wait, is that a spider place?
It's like a spider place. Like huge spiders. You always see like videos and things like, look at that spider. Ah, it's normal. I'm like, no, then not for me then. Or like Brazil.
How do you feel about scary media? like I saw The Shining in high school English class.
Yeah.
And even in 40-minute chunks during the day, yeah, while people threw spitballs, I was too upset to.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, I'm not, scary movies don't scare me. However, again, like spiders in movies, I can't watch it. So like you're talking about like Harry Potter, I'll close my eyes at the, I can't even think of the name of the spider in the forest. I close my eyes on it. If I go on the Harry Potter ride in Universal Studios, I shut my eye. I can't do it, you know? Lord of the Rings, Shelob's lair. I don't know what that part of the movie looks like fully. I cannot do it.
There's a pretty wild part in King Kong, the Peter Jackson King Kong, with all these giant spiders. Have you seen that movie?
I've seen all the parts around it. Can't do it. Can't do it. And like if I think about spiders too much, then I'll like close. If I think about spiders before I go to bed, I can't like not see them in my head, so I can't shut my eyes, and I'll be like, oop, nope. Now I'm thinking. Now my image in my head is more vivid than like an actual spider. So like I've got to like then keep myself up for a little bit and try and like distract myself, because I'm like, huh, spiders, huh? Oops, okay. Now we're on the. Okay. Oh, well, don't think about their eyes. Their eyes. I'm thinking about their eyes. And then, like, that goes on for 45 minutes at least.
This morning, my son came up to me as I was pouring breakfast cereal for myself.
Yeah.
And he said, Dad, did you know that scorpions have more eyes than spiders?
Didn't want to know that.
I was like, wow. Well, good morning.
Yeah, there you go. That's a cup of joe for you.
Oh.
I don't have a fear of scorpions, truly. But however, I've never like encountered a scorpion like in like the wild. So I wonder how I would react to it. I have no fear of snakes. You know, a healthy respect of werewolves, but not a, but and also has respect of wolves in general, but I do like them. But like a spider is just like an irrational thing. When I was a kid, I was, I grew up between Detroit and Ghana. And when I was in Ghana, my cousin and I watched Arachnophobia. My cousin Julian, we were watching the movie Arachnophobia. And we were in my aunt's house in Accra. And we're watching Arachnophobia, and it comes to part where the giant spider goes like reels up, and my cousin goes, yeah, like right next to me. And I screamed and I ran around the corner. And so the way the house was set up, it was there was like this living room, and then there was like a hallway that led to the kitchen with windows on it. And outside the windows was like a patio area with fluorescent lighting. And so like I was running down that hallway. And I'm running, and I'm like, I get down halfway through the hallway, and I like stop, and I'm like breathing. I'm like, whew, okay, okay. And then I see on the wall across from me, like the bat symbol, just like this image of like these legs and these arms. And I look to my right, and there's like a spider maybe 6 inches from my face, and I like fainted essentially. And from now on, that's like a true trauma. I can't handle them, which I'm going to overcome one day. Today's the day. There we go. I'm done with it.
I mean, I think we heard in that scene from Werewolves Within something that you are called upon to do a lot on screen, which is to be a charismatic good guy who nonetheless can't quite get over the hump.
Yes. Yes.
like a leader of men who is a little bit failing at leading men.
Yes. That's like the entire flock doesn't entirely listen. You know,
yeah. But honestly, like in a horror movie, even in a horror comedy, it's nice to have the black guy be the doofy one.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yes. Like this, instead of like the fast talking guy who gets killed quickly.
Yep. You know, it's nice to have the black guy be the sort of like emotional and inspirational, quote unquote, like leader for this thing, and like to make it far in. Who knows how far if you haven't seen the movie, but you know, to sort of be that instead of garnish, you know, to get to kind of like be the meat of this thing, and not only be the purpose being, oh my God, I'm so scared the whole time, you know, being like, oh, okay, well, what's the situation? I really appreciate it to get to do that and like that in the script as well.
I was and am a huge fan of the show that you and Tim Robinson created, Detroiters.
Oh, yes.
And one of the things that I don't think I realized until 6 or 8 episodes into the show that was unexpected to me was this is a show about two best friends, right? So the two of you are essentially the co-leads of the program.
Yep.
But in terms of the structure of the world of the show, Tim, is the best friend. He lives in your character's world, and Tim Robinson is white.
Yes.
And I thought, well, gosh, how many thousands of times have I seen a television sitcom with a black guy who's best friends to a white guy and lives in the white guy's world?
Mm-hmm.
And how close to zero times have I seen the opposite?
Right.
Was that a choice that the two of you made?
It was like to make it true to life, whereas like Detroit is 75% black, you know? So with casting and with that world and all that, we're like, well, this show is going to be black, primarily black show with characters who are also not, you know? And so like the show being a black show with Tim in it, you know? That we very purposefully, like, so at the workplace, it's Tim's, you know, legacy and Tim's job. But then outside of there, it's kind of like Sam's world, you know. So it's a very purposeful relationship. Like to have Tim's wife be my sister, and so that Tim's family is my family, you know. So Tim is my best friend and my brother-in-law, but in the family unit of the Duvets, which is the bigger family, and you get the Cramlins as well. But like, you know, typically the family things are happening among the Duvets and like the world, like you're trying to get the clients to be black, all these things, because that's what Detroit is, you know. So it was a very purposeful sort of composition.
Because of that composition, there's also something that you don't see a lot in television in terms of race dynamics, which is that Tim Robinson's character has a black wife, mm-hmm. which, you know, I mean, if you watch television commercials in America, there's a lot of interracial couples, and almost none of them have, in heterosexual couples, have a wife who is darker skinned than the husband.
Yep.
That is something that you essentially never see.
Yep.
And I just, I was like, isn't that nice? They're a loving couple that has normal couple things going on.
Yeah. You know, it was part of that composition was like, well, if Tim grew up in my world, again, in my world, you know, best friends, and he probably just mostly dated black girls, you know, and he mostly like existed in that world. So like him falling, and also in the thing is like, we spent so much time together. We never have explored this because we only did the 2 seasons, but like kind of like how the dynamic of them started, like where it came from. For a while, we never landed on whether Chrissy and I were twins or not, because we never like, but I was always kind of like a little idea. And so the idea of him marrying her was like the closest thing to marrying me that he could do. Because we're like such a pressure, like maybe we can hang out together all the time, and like, and like there's a photo of the wedding photo. I don't know if it ever showed up on screen, but it's like their wedding photos, and I'm in them too, like kind of doing jokes, and like she's like annoyed because like in marrying, like he married the both of us essentially.
We've got more to get into with Sam Richardson after a quick break. Stay with us. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
This message comes from Capital One, offering commercial solutions you can bank on. Now more than ever, your business faces unique challenges and opportunities. That's why Capital One offers a comprehensive suite of financial services, all tailored to your short and long-term goals. Backed by the strength and stability of a top 10 commercial bank, their dedicated experts work with you to build lasting success. Explore the possibilities at CapitalOne.com/commercial, a member FDIC.
Support for NPR and the following message come from Rosetta Stone, the perfect app to achieve your language learning goals no matter how busy your schedule gets. It's designed to maximize study time with immersive 10-minute lessons and audio practice for your commute. Plus, tailor your learning plan for specific objectives like travel. Get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off and unlimited access to 25 language courses. Learn more at rosettastone.com/NPR.
Welcome back to Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is Sam Richardson. He's the star of the TV show The After Party. Its two seasons are streaming now on Apple TV+. Richardson and his frequent collaborator Tim Robinson co-created and starred in the absolutely terrific show Detroiters. Sam is also a frequent presence on Tim Robinson's hilarious sketch show, I Think You Should Leave. Sam Richardson and I talked in 2021. Let's get back into our conversation. There's a great scene from the show that I'm going to play. And Detroiters ran for two seasons on Comedy Central a couple of years ago and was co-created by my guest Sam Richardson and his real-life pal Tim Robinson. And they play best buddies on the show. And they're also business partners in the advertising business, which they're pretty bad at, and they're neighbors. And Tim's character is married to Sam's character's sister. So they're very close knit. And so in this scene, the two of them are hanging out at a bar and Tim is trying to figure out why Sam has such a hard time meeting women.
When are you going to settle down, man?
Can you help us settle a bet?
Sure. Excuse me. We're talking. Move it along. Thanks. Seriously, man. When are you going to settle down? It's amazing.
Yeah, Tim, I do want to meet somebody.
Then what is stopping you?
Hey, I like your shirt. That color looks great on you.
Oh, so you just interrupt people? Is that your whole gig? You interrupt folks? We don't know who you are. Later, dude. Seriously, why are you not settling down?
Because of you, Tim! It is impossible to meet girls around you.
Okay, that's insane.
Oh, yeah, sure. Okay, I'm insane, man.
Suit yourself, man. Giving you advice.
the tag to that, that I think got edited out.
Oh, yeah.
It's him saying, maybe he's right. He goes, maybe he is insane.
Maybe I'm a figment of his imagination. Oh man! So that scene and that like sort of notion and like even that storyline comes from real life because Tim and I were, you know, performed at Second City together. We were on the main stage together in Chicago, and we would spend all the time together. You know, because we were best friends before, then got hired to the main stage together. We got moved to Chicago essentially the same time. Got hired to the main stage to write two shows together, and we would spend all our time together. We did 8 shows a week, 6 days a week. Tuesday through Sunday, and then Mondays we would hang out, you know, and go to the bar, go or watch TV or whatever. And Tim, though, would be the worst wingman possible. Like, we would go, so we would do a show at Second City, then go across the street to Corcoran's and, like, be eating. We would get what we called a turf and turf, which is where we would get wings and a burger, and we'd cut the burger in half and then split the wings. We go like, turf and turf? Yeah, turf and turf. Anyway, but we after
that's
a show.
That's very cute.
Isn't that cute?
It's
isn't
adorable. Cute? It's genuinely adorable.
We're very cute. We love each other very much. But we would do the show and then go across the street. And I was single. You know, Tim has been married to his high school sweetheart. Tim has essentially, you know, his whole adult life been married, you know. But we would go across the street and then, like, people would come up and, like, kind of, like, flirt, you know, and I'm like single, so I'm like, oh, perfect. I just did this show. I'm on cloud 9, and like,
got all these wings,
you know, got all these these wings and winks, and like, so we start talking, and then Tim would literally be like, excuse me, thank you, we're in the middle of something. He would do that, and he'd be so annoyed, and then I'd get so mad. He's like, sorry, but I just want to spend time with you. I'm like, yes, of course, we spend so much time together. Let me. Have this moment.
I mean, in Detroiters, I think you have a really clear reason to make the choice that these guys are going to be, you know, to borrow the Cherry Tomato brand Lil Sweetums, which is that, like, you want to do all this crazy stuff because I can tell the two of you just sit around all day making a list of crazy stuff you thought of for a guy to do.
Yeah, exactly.
What if a guy did this? What if a guy did that? But, like, beyond that, so you need to make room for that. Mm-hmm. But beyond that, like, you have named this show after your home.
Mm-hmm.
It is a home that is only represented in one way in mass media, essentially, which is as a symbol of either crime or decrepitude.
Yep.
Or, you know, maybe the, like, flip side of that, which is like a parody of, you know, blue collar resilience.
Right.
Something, 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 like picture of a metal grinder with sparks coming off of it.
Exactly.
And a guy lifting up his welder's mask. And, like, he's got, like, he's handsome. He's got a lined face.
Yep. Built for it tough.
So, like, ultimately, like, you're representing your home, which is a big responsibility. And if you made everybody in the show a jerk, it would be hard to represent your home in a way that you could be proud of.
Yes, exactly that. It was such an important thing to us to shine a different light on Detroit than is commonly, like with the idea of, like, Detroit being the easy joke for everyone. It makes us so mad. It makes me so mad. The idea is like, yeah, Detroit, like, oh, Detroit, right, like RoboCop. Like, you're just thinking of RoboCop automatically, or just like an easy A to B punchline is like, what's dangerous? Not more dangerous than Detroit. And then you're there and you get your little laugh and all that. But, like, it's so disrespectful to this place where there are people who are genuinely, it's a Midwestern city. So everybody is kind and everybody is, you know, is doing their best and everybody is supporting the way they live. That the fact that outside of it, everybody's like, ha ha ha. And then we're like, whoa, you know how strong we are here? Like, we wanted to show that to a degree, or not even to a degree. We wanted to show that. And give that the respect and the love that it deserves. And I think we achieved that. And I think at first, I don't think the show was very well advertised and or, like, well set. People from Detroit were a little fearful of it. They were like, oh, what's this? This isn't Detroit. I'm like, well, it is. Like, I'm not an outsider. I've lived there my entire life. Well, up until I left. But I think as the show went on and people, like, kind of saw what we were doing, they got on board. I remember, and I was happy that it was, like, well received by Detroiters themselves. After the show premiered, Tim and I went to Detroit to, like, do a screening, and I remember the very first person off the airplane, like the guy who, like, with the wheelchair, like, on the tarmac, was like, "Hey, Detroiters!" And I was like, "Wow." That's, like, the very first person stepping back into Detroit was somebody who, like, loved and respected that show. And if we walk down the streets of Detroit together, people will stop and they'll honk and they'll be like, yay! And, like, that's the warmest, best feeling, you know. People would get so annoyed with us when we were, like, in Chicago, because, like, they would always, like, yeah, we get it, Sam, Tim, you're from Detroit. Yes, we know. And we always, like, yeah, back in Detroit, we do this, and back in Detroit, because we love it so much. Anybody from Detroit will always rep Detroit as hard as they can. And that's not a false thing. It's because we love where we come from so much, you know, and that's universal.
It's a very beautiful place. I've only been one time, so yeah. I can't speak to it from a really informed perspective. But that was something that struck me in the time that I was there. I was like, wow, what a beautiful city.
Yeah.
You know, like, it's, you know, it's similar to when you're in Chicago and you're like, God, there's a lot of beautiful buildings around me. It was the very same feeling in Detroit. Like, what a beautiful place.
Yeah, really, really it is. And, like, you know, the ruin porn that, you know, is books are sold on and, like, all these things. I get it, because you are looking at something beautiful and, like, even, like, something amazing. Once that was once magnificent and majestic is now dilapidated. But in that dilapidation, there is still, like, this beauty and, like, the negative space of what was there and what is there currently is beautiful in itself. But sort of, like, I appreciate that, but you have to counter it with like what is alive there as well. If you only show these things that are like decrepit, then people think it's a zombie town, you know. But like you have to show what is still there and what is new there, you know, along with what was there and what is old there.
I want to play an I Think You Should Leave sketch that is really a Sam Richardson sketch. Yeah. This is one where you're really front and center. You're really carrying the burden on this. It's called Baby of the Year. And I mean, it's a sort of beauty contest, although not, I mean, in the same way that beauty contests aren't just about beauty.
Right. You
know, it's a pageant for babies.
For babies. Just like the general baby.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And my guest, Sam Richardson, is the host.
Who will be the baby of the year? Look at their rolls. Look at their folds. Look at their rummy, bummy tummies. Heads are round, bellies are squishy. Look at their toes. Lots of many curls and shrimp. Are they ticklish? Are they jigglish? Can they be tricked? Can they be chucked? Which ones will move? Which ones will talk? But more important, which ones can dance? Oh, who will be baby of the year?
This sketch, like many I Think You Should Leave sketches, just has a long series of premises.
Yes, exactly. Premise. So many twists and turns and like hard banks.
Like it really starts with what we just heard, which is what if in like there's kid pageants, there's toddler pageants. Why not baby pageants? That's just a pretty straightforward sketch premise that could be on almost any sketch show.
Yep.
And it just like there's no moment that is not more insane than the last.
Yes. Yes. Because it goes from there into like the devolution. It devolves quickly in the idea of like, oh, well, all right, there's three babies, but the one baby is hated by the audience. like for what? Like, why? What did this baby do? Like
the bad audience, boy baby.
The bad boy baby. And the audience is not having it. They
wearing
hate
a leather jacket.
He's wearing a leather jacket and a little bandana. And Bart Harley Jarvis is the bad boy of the competition. You know? And then, it like kind of just goes so many places.
Well, I mean, there is a pleasure in like, I can't believe how crazy this thing is, that is kind of like, you know, it's what people imagine of the kind of like Adult Swim humor of 20 years ago, 15, 20 years ago, right? And it can be really great. One of the things that always surprises me, and it was true of Detroiters, it's true of I Think You Should Leave, is the commitment to grounding this insane nonsense in human emotion.
Yes, exactly that. Exactly that. And I mean, I think that's like the key to comedy, period, you know, is like the key to like bold, big sketch comedy is like whatever's going on, as long as somebody like legitimately cares about it in the thing, then you can get away with so much, you know. And it grounds even the most out there premise, as long as somebody is like has an emotional investment in it, you know. So that's true for that sketch. Like the people, like, and there's so many different emotions in that, like, because the people aren't just like screaming out, they legitimately hate that baby. This guy legitimately yes. is like annoyed with how the thing is going. Like he legitimately is angry at them for like screaming and ruining the competition. And then like even at the end, like dump it, this one's garbage, dump it, like he's giving up on this thing.
Your mother is Ghanaian, as yes. you mentioned, and you spent a fair bit of your childhood in Ghana, just, you know, going there whatever summers or mm-hmm. that kind of thing. You know, what kind of relatives did you have in Ghana who didn't spend much time in the United States?
Most of my cousins were between Ghana and London. I was the American one up until older, when my cousin Lauren then came to the States to go to college. And then my cousin William came, he started working in finance. But apart from that, I'm the American one among my Ghanaian and English cousins, you know.
What did they think that meant?
What did they think that? And also, because like America was like very cool, you know, it's very cool. And like also you could, my cousins would come, sometimes they'd come and visit the States. And the whole idea was like, go shopping. You can get your cool sneakers. You can get all these things. You can get stuff because like the tax and like the import and all the stuff, it doesn't make sense to like buy it in England, or you certainly just can't buy it in Ghana. So you'd come to America and like you'd just get stuff to take back with you. So it was like sort of like an amusement park kind of thing, you know, come to America and like all the stuff is on TV and like all the, you know, go to the mall and like all these activities. There's like so much going on, even in Detroit, you know.
Like a Bill and Ted type situation.
You know, truly.
All the figures from history are playing the demonstration organ in the mall.
Exactly. Station is, you know. But yeah, I think among us, we were all Ghanaian, you know. And so being the American Ghanaian just meant that I was spending less time with everybody than everybody else was, you know, but it was still, you know, we still had like our, there we were Ghanaians with a little extra something, you know, if that makes sense.
We'll finish up with Sam Richardson after a quick break. As we said, Sam is a nice guy. He gets a lot of roles where he plays nice guys. And when we come back, he will tell us how he plans to break into new different parts. It's Bullseye from MaximumFun.org and NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from NPR sponsor Allianz Travel Insurance. Medical emergencies, travel delays, canceled flights, anything can happen when you travel. That's why more than 70 million American travelers choose Allianz Travel Insurance to help them with headaches along the way. Get a quote and learn more at AllianzTravelInsurance.com.
Support for NPR and the following message come from the Walton Family Foundation, working to create access to opportunity for people and communities by tackling tough social and environmental problems. More information is at waltonfamilyfoundation.org.
The human mind can be tricky. Your mental health can be complex. Your emotional life can be complicated. So it helps to talk about it. I'm John Moe. Join me each week on my show, Depression Mode with John Moe. It's in-depth conversations about mental health with writers, musicians, comedians, doctors, and experts. Folks like Noah Kahn, Sashir Zameda, and Surgeon General Vivek Murthy. We talk about depression, anxiety, trauma, imposter syndrome, and perfectionism. We have the kind of conversations that a lot of folks are hesitant to have themselves. Listen, and you won't feel as alone, and you'll have some laughs, too. Depression Mode for Maximum Fun at MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Bullseye. I'm Jesse Thorne. My guest is actor Sam Richardson. Did you have a different class position in the States and in Ghana and in London if you were visiting family there?
Yes. In the States, you know, My family was like into politics. My auntie is a congresswoman, you know. We were involved in politics and all that sort of stuff. And like, you know, like middle class, you know, African American family in Detroit. And in Detroit being like a predominantly black city, you know, that's good. But in Ghana, my grandfather was a chief and like a businessman. So like we were upper class in Ghana. So, you know, drivers and, you know, cooks and all that sort of thing where like the dichotomy of wealth also like lends itself to that, where like you have the haves and you have the have nots. And so like it's the haves. If you don't have a cook and a driver, then you're being irresponsible because like you have to employ people, you know, that sort of thing. Now there's a full middle class in Ghana. I think the advent of like technology in becoming exponentially more available and useful and cheap kind of like allowed that to happen. But it was an interesting thing to go from being at the top of the mountain to being in, even in Detroit, even among all the black people, you know, you're still you're still second class. You know, that makes sense. I mean, of course, it makes sense because it's what it is. But you can certainly see it. Like, you come back to the States, and like, you, even if all you see are black people around you, if you turn on the TV, you don't. You know, and so like, that's the culture there, and here. But versus Ghana, I was like, oh, everybody's black, and all the president's black here. The parliament's all black here. The king of the chief of Mpraisu is black. The chief of Atibie is black. The chief of, you know, the Omaheni is black. They're all African, you know, everything. But then you still have these interests from other nations, and colonialism still has its grips there. So like, a lot of the wealth is still diverted to white nations and to white people. Like, I remember a friend of mine growing up at school, his name was Alex, and his dad worked in the gold mines. And I was like, he's from Canada. And I was like, why? Like, why do you have access to our gold mines? It never made sense to me. You know, like, this resource, surely this is our resource. We mine it and then we sell it. Why is that not the case? But even still, I'm like, I don't, it's befuddling to me. But that sort of thing, like, you know, like age old lines cut in drawn, like literally lines drawn in the earth to say that this is what Ghana is and this is what Africa is, and we've accepted that, and that's like what our world is. Even in this place where I'm like, oh well, in America, you know, it's at the behest or at the sort of whatever the service of white people is. In Africa, it's that way as well, because that's global.
Did other kids at school in Detroit where you grew up know you were or think of you as Ghanaian?
Not really. I've always been pretty Americanized, but I was like the African prince. That's what like it would say. But like, because I went to such a small school, that kind of like fades pretty quick. Cause like, you know, there was like 15 kids in my graduating class from middle school. I went to a friend's school. So it was like the same kids from first grade to eighth grade, you know? So like the idea of like, of me being African. There was one kid who was new. I had just moved back from Ghana maybe 2 years previous, and she was new to the class, and I convinced her that I was British, and she believed it, and everybody was like, yeah, let's play this game. And so it's truly cruel.
Everyone was on board for this?
Yeah, yeah.
All 13 other?
13, cause
what about staff?
Staff, I don't know. And also the idea was that
you know, the Quakers are known for cruelty.
They love cruelty. They love to get one up on each other.
If you've seen the prank wars in Quaker communities, have a meeting.
Yeah.
You know what, that silence where everyone is contemplating exactly. Whether they should speak. Meeting. They're actually just letting cockroaches loose up people's trouser legs.
That's right, and into people's ears. It's a funny Quaker prank.
Mm-hmm.
But also the game there was, when I was using my American accent, that was me trying to fit in. And so then when I was talking to her and everybody's like, wow, you know, like she was like the only one who really knew that I was British, and maybe a couple other people.
Is this a story you've ever told your therapist about?
No. No.
Okay. I don't know if you have a therapist, but it's possible it might have some symbolic meaning.
Probably. It probably does.
I have a good buddy from back home where I'm from in San Francisco,
yeah,
who is now an Emmy-winning television host. He's a stand-up comic for a long time, still is a stand-up comic. And because he is a huge guy, has an afro, and wears glasses,
mm-hmm.
He fell into show business's best friend category immediately, mm-hmm. and very hard, and had to try and figure out what to do about the fact that he's also very genial.
Mm-hmm.
White people like him because he seems like a nice guy. He is a nice guy. That's why.
Yeah.
But white people like him because he seems like a nice guy. And it took him a long time to find his own career and voice because of that.
Mm-hmm.
Now you are a guy who comes over on screen and in real life is a notably nice guy, which means that if you want to have, and you're also very good at, you know, you're a skilled performer. So if you want to have a career being a nice friend on every television show and in every movie ever made, you'll, you know, you'll own a home here in Los Angeles and have health insurance for a long time. Are there things that you want to do or wish you could do that are difficult to access from that place of people immediately seeing you as a nice friend?
Yes, but I think I'm actively working to sort of widen that breadth. I'm not offered characters who have backbone a lot of times. It's always like a person who's like tripping up over himself. And, you know, because I think I am good at imbuing like a kindness and a sort of likability to a character who is be like a sad sack otherwise, you know, like a sad sack weak guy. I think I'm good at, and people I think look to me to try and find a way to like make that person likable and charming and those things. But there's very rarely do characters I play like straighten their back and be like, hey, get the hell out of here. Like, what are you talking about? Which is something I do myself. You know, like I'm nice up until I'm disrespected, and then I'll, you know what I mean? I can turn on a dime and become very sinister. but like that sort of character who doesn't need to have the other shoe drop when the person does stand up for themselves. The rug doesn't need to be yanked out of, from under him once he like has like a bold moment. I think it's something that I'm looking to do more and, figuring out for myself. And when I read things, I'm like, well, even if this character is this, like, I'm looking for more characters with like guile, you know, and sort of not just like
guileful characters, guileful guileless characters.
Exactly. You know, that's something I'm making sure that it doesn't become that people don't think I can do that. You know,
you just sent your agent a postcard that says Wiley on it.
Wiley, exactly. Wiley? Hmm? yeah, I'm, let me send another text.
Sam Richardson, thanks for coming on Bullseye.
Thank you so much for having me. This is great.
Sam Richardson from 2021. You can catch him in both seasons of The After Party, a very funny, unique spin on the murder mystery genre. It's on Apple TV+. Also, Detroiters is so great. Can't recommend it. If you just need to watch something that is goofy and fun and about dumb friends, you can stream both seasons of Detroiters on Paramount Plus and on the Comedy Central app. That's the end of another episode of Bullseye. Bullseye created from the homes of me and the staff of Maximum Fun in and around Greater Los Angeles, California. Some guys came and built a shed in my backyard. They did it in one day. It's like a pretty big shed. It's unbelievable to me that there was no building there yesterday, and now there's an entire building there. Absolutely incredible. My thanks to Shed World. The show is produced by Speaking Into Microphones. Our senior producer is Kevin Ferguson. Our producers are Jesus Ambrosio and Richard Roby. Our production fellow at Maximum Fun is Brianna Paz. We get booking help from Mara Davis. Our interstitial music is by Dan Wally, also known as DJW. Our theme song is Huddle Formation by The Go Team. Their label, Memphis Industries, and the band themselves agreed to let us use that. We always appreciate it. Bullseye is on Instagram now. You can find interview highlights and looks behind the scenes and all kinds of stuff at Bullseye with Jesse Thorne. You can also find us on Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. I think that's about it. Just remember, all great radio hosts have a signature sign-off.
Bullseye with Jesse Thorne is a production of MaximumFun.org and is distributed by NPR.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Allianz Travel Insurance. Don't get caught without emergency medical coverage on an international trip. Learn how Allianz Travel Insurance can protect your trip from the unexpected at AllianzTravelInsurance.com.